Blog Talk Radio.
Provocative talk, you know, from a male perspective, where we explore love, life, and relationships. Always shoot for an honest self-evaluation, and we do our best. And we do, most of the times, we get accomplishments as well. We don't shy away from some things that need to be said. When you put all that together, we're One Black Man Talk. I'm Mark Elliott, soon to be joined by Mr. D. Maurice and Mr. Charles. And as I said before, we've been doing this for a while, and I'm going to try to figure out how long we've been doing it. I know it's been a grip, so I'm going to leave it just at that. But happy to be doing it. And as you can hear, the gentleman that's laughing in the background, that's one Mr. D. Maurice. Let's bring him in. How you feeling, sir?
Feeling much better, considering all day listening to Gregory Porter, the healing sounds of Gregory Porter. Grip is a long time, bro.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that word in a long time.
Yeah, you're right about that. I have to thank you for turning me on to Greg Reporter, man. I remember a few years ago, you said to me, if he ever comes to town, be sure to check him out. And to me, his talent, not his talent, his stage show has changed a little bit. But several years ago, the first time catching him was utterly amazing, man.
Yeah.
That brother is something else. Yeah, he's just, he's something else. And I say change a little bit, maybe to be a little bit more mainstream, sort of speak, but not in a bad way. Mr. Charles, how are you feeling, sir?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Feeling good, bro. Feeling good, man. Feeling good. You know, gentlemen, we talked about this young lady a little while ago. And I came across some information that really made me excited and made me happy and felt some joy. There's a push, and it's real close to happening, to get a full-length statue of Shirley Caesar placed inside the Capitol. Think about that for a second. Because realistically, it almost seemed like she was forgotten about. And I'm not sure when this started. I know when Biden chose Harris to run with him, I think at that point, people kind of started thinking back to Shirley Chisholm. So with that being said, Mr. Charles, you know, you're a big fan of, like we all are. When you hear about the news and the potential, a full statue of hers could be placed inside the Capitol one day soon, how does it make you feel?
Well, I'm elated by it because of the fact that when she did what she did, she took a chance and she stood out when it wasn't popular. And no disrespect to our current vice president, but Shirley Chisholm clearly paved the way, along with many others, for that to happen. So I have a huge respect for that, because you're recognizing somebody that did something that was hard to do, not popular, was catching a lot of hell, but she still stood up and did the right thing. And now here we are today with the result.
Good thing about this too, man, is that a lot of times when people pass, something like this happened to Mrs. Maurice, but she's around to basically witness, man. I think that's even more of something that we could be happy. Your response here, Mr. Maurice?
So let me get this straight. Is it Shirley Caesar or Shirley Chisholm?
Shirley Chisholm. I'm sorry if I said Caesar.
Okay.
Kind of close to this. Shirley Chisholm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the interesting things that I just found out, I was watching an interview on a news show on PBS not too long ago. Regina King was on there, and she's in the near future, she's going to do a movie portraying Shirley Chisholm. And she said when she and others are trying to pitch this movie to some executives in Hollywood, they didn't know who she was. So she was like, that was more affirmation or a confirmation to do this story, that this story needed to be told, it had to be told, because there is no way that you can go through U.S. history and not know who Shirley Chisholm is. And so I'm glad she's going to be playing the part of Shirley Chisholm. I'm glad she's moving forward and getting this movie done, and I can't wait to see it.
Sounds good, man. Big fan of Regina King, too, by the way. Remember, she was back on 227. Gentlemen, we brush talked about this just a little bit. We're not going to talk about it much now, but I'm going to throw it out there just in case you want to kind of comment on it. But we know that Georgia basically came up with one of the dumbest voting laws in a long time. And, you know, there's a few people behind it. I'm not going to mention names, so I think that's behind it. But anyway, the response to it has been, I don't think, what Georgia governor and the state thought it would be. We know MLB kind of kicked out and decided they're not going to be there. There was a couple of corporations in the state of Georgia that kind of spoke out. But what I found interesting was, you know, there's a Republican senator that came out and basically told corporations to stay out of politics. But, you know, and realistically, if you want to stay out, you can't take their money. So I believe yesterday, the day before, there was 100 corporate executives that got on a Zoom call, and they're basically taking their money away from the GOP, and they're coming on the side to fight for voting rights for everyone. And it's interesting because I don't think what the GOP realizes is that when you tell a basketball player to play ball and don't do nothing else, you know, you might get away with it because, you know, they are, you know, they're cowards for the most part. But when you tell executives what they can't do and what they should do, it's a little different story. Hearing the story, Mr. DeMaurice, what are you thinking, sir?
I was hoping that something like this would happen because when the senator who said that, I kind of had like a confused look on my head because a lot of money that they get to run for office and to get policies passed and things of that sort come from corporate America. They have a voice in politics and in policies. And so for him to say that is almost like, you know, the old folks who say you get too big for your britches. So now I got to show you,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it really is. So now
mm-hmm.
you really put your foot in your mouth. And now you're going to be running on less money or if you have any money at all. And I'm glad that they decided, hey, you know, people need to vote. And everybody has the right to vote. And so I'm glad that they're seeing it because many years ago, not too many years ago, corporations would have a blind eye to this and say, you know, as long as they're doing what I need them to do with my money, then you know, I'm not going to say anything about it. But I think they're recognizing that, you know, people will pull their support for these corporations and these products. And so that's where the true money is and how they butter their bread. And so they're listening to the people who really kind of support them and pay for them and keep them afloat instead of the politicians who do nothing. So I'm glad that they take this step forward to do that and put the GOP on notice that, you know, this is not the same America that you kind of grew up in 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Interesting point. It's funny because, not in a comical sense, but when the governor initially signed this, there was a push in Georgia where they was going to boycott Coke, Home Depot, and Delta. And that's why you see they came out first because there was a push initially to basically take our money around the country and not spend it with them anymore. So, Mr. Charles, we hear that corporations, 100 executives decided, you know what? We ain't losing out on their green. You know, we're going to do something a little different. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great. It makes sense. But you think about, too, with these corporations, how many people of color sit in different places in those corporations, particularly somewhere down in Atlanta. So there was a lot of pressure for them to do what they did. I mean, they could have said something else, but you have a lot of people in those offices. The other part of it, too, is when you think about even, for instance, with Delta, I have a friend that lives in Atlanta, and she was telling me, imagine if you take those dollars of people of color away from Delta. She told me one time, I think like last week or so, when everything started opening up, that 1 million people, 1 million people, had come through or visited or some kind of way traveled through the Atlanta airport on a Friday. 1 million people on one day.
It's a lot
that's
of money.
That's kind of trapping.
That's a lot of money right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gentlemen, we brushed this conversation a little bit on the sports show last Thursday, the Goon Squad Sports Show. And I want to come back because I remember when this happened. You told me, you said, give it a couple of days before you view it, because I didn't view the video. And my reaction was, you know, based on, you know, what we're talking about. I didn't view the video, but you said, give it a couple of days, because, you know, you want to be ready when you watch it. But congratulations first to Hubert Davis. This young man played, if I'm not mistaken, he played at North Carolina. He came to the pros basketball, and he played for the New York Knicks. I don't remember much of that, but he did play for the New York Knicks. But he has taken over the head coach position for North Carolina College to lead that university on. And we were all happy that, you know, they chose to go with him. And, of course, you know, without saying it, it is what it is. He's the first black man. I'm not going to say African-American. He's the first black man that was given honor to lead North Carolina College. Now, you may think, in a sense, when you hear that, you go, okay, it happens. It's, you know, whatever the case may be. But think about North Carolina, South Carolina from years ago. And I think sometimes when things like this happen, we shrug it to the side because, you know, we know what should have happened years ago, but when it happens now, it's like, yeah, what's the big deal? When you think about what went on in the Carolinas years ago, and he's been chosen to represent the school and to lead the school and kind of be the face of the school when it comes down to it, because you don't see the president of colleges, but you see the coaches more than you see anybody else when it comes to these colleges, especially as they travel. So when you think about that years ago, what was going on in the Carolinas, and now he's going to be facing North Carolina, it says something. And I think that kind of plays into what he might have said at the press conference, so the things he said at the press conference, and what he said that caught the ire of some people. And he was asked about being the first African-American head coach, and he talked about some things, and then he talked about his white wife. But he also mentioned it has mixed kids. And I think that through a lot of folks, you know, a curveball, maybe not a curveball, fastball that might have came straight down the middle, so to speak. So I'm coming to you first, Mr. DeMaurice, because I know you have an, you know, affection for this university. So, what you initially heard, that's, you know, how you felt when you heard that, and now it's been a few days, and what you may be feeling now, sir.
You know, I had some days to think about it, and it made me think about Dean Smith, who was like one of my all-time favorite coaches, who brought in Charlie Scott, who was the first African American to play at North Carolina, and how Dean Smith was a big advocate for civil rights and things of that sort. And, you know, and he pretty much got the ball rolling as far as having African-American presence on the North Carolina, University of North Carolina campus. And, you know, when my father's side of family is from North Carolina, so you have mostly University of North Carolina fans there in my family, but you do have some Duke fans, which I found out in recent years, and dad's a Duke fan. I don't hold that against them. But I'll give you a story my dad told me the other day. A lady friend of his who's a big Carolina fan didn't hear about the story. And my father said after he watched the show that we did, he went back and looked at the video and couldn't understand why he said it. It just blew his head. He mentioned it to his lady friend, and she's like, oh, I haven't seen it. I guess she was walking in the store with a Carolina shirt on, and she was asking help from this guy, and he was like, well, usually I don't help, you know, folks who wear that kind of shirt in here, but I'm going to help you out today. And she just thought it was about, you know, the Duke-Carolina rivalry. And then as she was getting ready to leave, he said, how long you think your coach, new coach is going to be at Carolina? And she was like, oh, I don't know. He'll probably be there for a while. And she didn't think back at, like, what my dad said, you need to watch the videotape. And she said she watched it and called him and said, that man got my pressure up. Now, that's like a little microcosm of what he's going to be getting. I know he's recruited a big-time player, I guess, who transferred from Virginia. There are other players who are leaving. But that's how he kind of set himself up to have an uphill battle with this, because you're already going to have an uphill battle in a red state, being an African-American coach there at Carolina. But now you put – I think you mentioned on the show you put the target on your back, where if things don't go well, this is going to – what people go back to. And if you get fired, they're going to mention the first day you got the job, what you did that kind of just set the stage for everything you did after that. So I thought it wasn't really necessary. And I went back and listened to the whole conference, and I'm like, this wasn't necessary. It didn't need to be said that way. I don't know what was in his head. I don't know what happened before that, but it just seemed to be just unnecessary. And you hate to see someone who kind of just really just put their foot in their mouth on the first day of the job. And it's going to be sad to see him be judged by that. And maybe the ridicule his wife gets when she walks into if they ever open up the center that they play in, the Dean Center they play in, and how that's going to really kind of be the spotlight instead of him doing his job as coach. And so I hope he does well, but it's like maybe he'll learn from this. Hopefully he'll learn from this. That you got to be better prepared, because I got to know that he knew what question was coming, and he could have prepared a great answer for it, or answer to get past it and to move on and make it more about basketball. But it's almost like he just tried to improvise, and it just didn't come out right. Sad to say, I was talking about that yesterday, that it kind of goes back to the scandal where a lot of basketball team and athletic players were taking Afro-American classes but weren't going to class. And I'm like, it kind of making a statement that the athletes don't really go there to learn. They go there to play. And that they, you know, when you put a microphone in front of them or they have to test to see, you know, where they got their education from, because I think about Michael Jordan talking about the ceilings on the roof and all that other stuff. And, you know, public speaking there in North Carolina, it doesn't look good when you compare it to Duke, who's supposed to be the Ivy League of the South. And that's the reputation. The Duke is the Ivy League of the South, and the Bamas go to North Carolina. They're not too smart people go to North Carolina. So it just really makes it look bad, and it kind of gives a lot more firepower to Duke and other universities around there about North Carolina. And maybe next time, I don't know how long he's going to be there, but maybe next time, you know, they go outside of Carolina a little bit if this doesn't work out.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I watched it. He started out well. The guy asked him the question. He started out well. He had statistics about, you know, about black coaches and speaking how they need to be more. And it seemed like, to me, he veered off because he was trying to maybe speak to some anger he had about having a white wife. And maybe some people have said some things to him. And it seemed like he got caught in that emotion. And he said, I'm proud to have a white wife, and we have mixed kids, or I'm proud to have mixed kids. And that's great, bro, to feel that way. But I'm not sure, Mr. Charles, at a press conference, that is time to basically beat your chest and say, I'm proud to have a white wife. And granted, that's his personal feeling, but I think he got caught up a little bit thinking, you know, here's a chance for me. Maybe, you know, they've dealt with some things in the past about being an interracial couple in North Carolina, and he's fed up with it. It bothered him, and he wanted to make a statement and make a declaration. But I'm not sure if that was the right time. Your thoughts, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's his press conference, so, I mean, I get that. But with the significance of the order at hand, and the fact of being the first. And you think about it, DeMarie said it best when he mentioned about Charlie Scott. I just remember North Carolina basketball growing up. I remember Sweet D, Walter Davis, right? Mm-hmm. Cats like that. you know, just feel forward. You know, guys that just were amazing on the court, African-Americans. And then you just go through the process, even with Jordan. You know, those names ring out. But and then you had, I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name. I think he, was it Robinson, the assistant coach? What was his name? Was it Williams or Robinson? That was there for a long time as the assistant.
I think Robinson.
Robinson with the glasses, yeah.
Kansas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was there for years, but he never got a shot, and you never thought he would get a shot. So to hear Hubert Davis kind of downplay the significance of such a monumental moment, right? Then you go to, and I'm proud I have a white wife. Okay, that's cool. Do you have to say that? Why don't you just bring your wife out? And as you said, Mark, about there might be a possibility that he's feeling some kind of way. He's been catching hell for having a white wife from somebody or Twitter or social media or whatever. And it's cool to be happy about your family. I mean, you should be very proud of who you married and your wife. Cool. But at the point, your wife had nothing to do with it, at least to the point of representing basketball. Your wife can't help you coach unless she's going to be on the sidelines wiping out the, you know, dry erase board or something like that. But I just thought it could have been done another time. He already had a bunch of pictures that he was going to take with his kids and his family. This is monumental, man. Very monumental. And it was an opportunity for him to show that he was who he was as a black man. You know, no matter what you do or who you marry, you're a black man first. That's real talk. And you are reminded about that often. But he did it a different way, and that's cool. But I don't know. I just thought it was a little different, quite different. Hope he wins. Because if you don't, they'd be like, oh, the first black coach can't win. Anyway, but he got a white wife.
He's going to be reminded quite quickly on the recruiting trail. And I said that on the show, bro. Because let's face it, man, a lot of the best college basketball players are going to look like him. They may not act like him, but they're going to look like him. And you're going to have to go into their homes and look their mamas in the face, bro. And some of them are going to question you, you know, why you're married to a white woman. Let's be honest, man. And you're proud of it. You know, that may not sit well. So that, I think he's going to have a little tough time recruiting. I know you said, Mr. DeMaurice, he has some players transferring. You see a lot of players transferring around the league now, I mean, in college in general. But, you know, here again, I think he has a right to, if he's proud, that's fine. But it wasn't the place and time to kind of put that out there and really kind of – it seemed like he was trying to really throw it at someone or something, and I just don't think it fit. I just don't think it fit. But I want to touch base on something Mr. Charles said, is that, being a black man first, and in my opinion, you have a lot of cats that marry a white woman thinking that it makes them more elite, thinking that it puts them on a higher scale and they would be viewed differently. And it's a possibility that he done that or may not, but throughout the years, he hasn't been received well as he thought he was going to receive, married a white wife. Now, if, you know, love is love, and some say love has no color. But I don't think you have to basically use your white wife as something to build confidence or to make a claim. And that's, to me, is something he did. But I did change a little bit how I initially heard about it, because once I listened to him, I thought the brother was really he was speaking to something. He really was. Not that I feel sorry for him, but he's speaking to something. But he's going to have a little tough road, because this is not going to necessarily go away. And when things really get rough, it's not going to really be about his coaching sometimes. It's going to be about, hey, he said this, he's this type of guy, blah, blah, blah. So hopefully he can handle this and his shoulders can take it, because it's going to come. It's definitely going to come, and it's going to come around there. But if he starts off and he does well, we won't talk about it too much, I guess. Assured reliance on character, ability, strength, and truth of someone. You put that together, that's basically trust, gentlemen, what it comes down to. And this is the thing that I know we have, now, it seemed like the last month or two, we kind of come back to this, because it's a big thing. It's a big thing. We talked about the potential of love and trust. And most of the time, love is the word you hear, and you don't hear somebody say to somebody often, hey, I trust you.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, I trust you.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically either you do or you don't, but you hear the word I love you most of the times and hear it often. So I'm going to start here, Mr. Charles, and we're going to work our way through it, because most of the times trusting, when we look at trust in a sense, especially in the sense of a relationship, we base it on, I think, sometimes solely infidelity. But if that's not what it is, for most part, when you look at trust, what matters to you and what are deal breakers when it comes to trust, if it's not solely infidelity?
When you think about infidelity, it's one thing. That's only part of the package for me, because when I see trust, I think about the relationship where oftentimes people will open themselves. They will share their inner deepest inner thoughts. They will share things that could potentially hurt them, their weaknesses. And they also would hope that that person, if they can trust you, they know that they're not going to tear you down and they have your back, even when they know your weaknesses. And I think that's where the trust comes with me, because there's information that could be shared with others or gossip that could be damaging to the individual. And it comes back to the trust of, if you're in a relationship, if we're on the same team, if you tear me down, we cannot possibly win. I say that all the time. If you're on my team, I can't cut you. Or if I don't want to cut you, then we have to work together to become a solid team. If I can't trust you and you're going out here running your mouth and sharing things about us that can be detrimental overall to other people that are jealous of what we're doing, nah. I mean, so trust goes a long way. And I know talking about that love thing too, but I got to learn how to, before I trust you, I might have to be connected to you, want to be with you some kind of way. And I know DeMaurice had a big conversation about that with his some of his major supporters in Columbus, Ohio. So that would be interesting to see what the hell he got to say.
Major supporters. I like that, man. Yeah, that's Philip Simmons, DeMaurice, you know. Because when we hit this a few months ago, you came out, bro, and you was like 100% trust. And, you know, love, who cares about that, man? Give me trust or give me nothing at all. So when you – and here again, is it solely based on infidelity or is it based on other things that kind of break the deal for you? And, of course, we hear about what went down in Columbus too, my brother.
I don't think it's solely based on infidelity. I think it's it comes down to also if I'm not at my best, can I trust you to keep me up until I can be at my best? And then when you're not at your best, I can do the same for you. Can I rely on you? Can I lean on you when I need to, when I'm feeling weak or I'm not that strong? Can I rely on you when the world is beating me up, that you'll be the only one that's in my corner saying, I understand and I got you? And so, you know, infidelity is the only part of that trust. It's, will that person be there for you in the long haul? And being there for the long term, not the short term. And even when you're not liking that person a lot at that particular point, they might do something to make you mad or whatever. You know, that same partner, you know, you're not speaking to them, they're not speaking to you, and all of a sudden, like, you want something to eat? They still care about you. They still care about your well-being. That's the trust I'm talking about, and that's the connection I'm talking about. I think we were having a conversation yesterday where some of the women in the book club were saying that what does a woman have to do to get that trust from a man, or have him you know, put down his inhibition so that he could you know, really kind of give everything, and that she can get everything also. And some of them were saying that, I think, and you can correct me, Charles, on this, that they haven't met men like that yet, or they were thinking that, you know, them giving up the, you know, their yoni to do so, that's the only way you can do it. And I'm like, you know, well, different people have different appetites, because the question came about was, you know, they're giving up their everything and their yoni and all that other stuff, but how many yonis does a man need? And so there was another question from a gentleman there, like, well, how many private parts does a woman need? And so basically I felt caught in the middle to say, you know, well, it's based on the person's appetite. But if the, you know, if you have some men who is one yoni is all they need and that's all that matters and they can trust and they can go on, I said, but it's more than just the physical to gain somebody's trust. I think love will come. But if you can't trust that person to be hold all your secrets and to be there for you and that confidant and all that other stuff, then that can always change, because I was always taught that a woman has a right to change their prerogative. So they can love you one day and decide, wake up in the morning like, I ain't feeling this. I'm not feeling this at all. So I don't love you. And it can change just like the wind. So, you know, that's why I said, I reiterated yesterday that, you know, I think it's more, for me, it's more of the trust that regardless of whether or not we have that loving feeling, can I trust you as a friend? Can I trust you as a confidant? Can I trust you as a person that will not betray me in any way, or don't do it, you know, purposely, you know, because we all make mistakes and we all disappoint at some particular point. But are you going out your way to bring me down because you know certain things that other people don't know, and that could be my downfall? So I think that's a big part of relationships, the trust. It's almost like, I'll put it this way, and I thought about this the other day when you brought it up. It's like, you know, you have parents, and you trust that they're going to take care of you regardless of what. You have all the faith in the world that no matter what, no matter how bad it is, they're going to do their damnedest to make sure everything is all right. And so in the intimate more relationships, it's a little different, but I think it's the same, is that no matter what, you know that person is going to have your back, and that you don't even have to think about it or even wonder about it, that person is just going to be there. And I need to know that first before I could get to that point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to give you the intimate side of me. I'm going to tell you my secrets. I'm going to open my heart. I'm going to give you what is precious to me, knowing that you're not going to crush it or break it.
There's a song out by Monica. That's just a little old now. I've been thinking about this for a while. I'll pull some lyrics from that song and we'll kind of tear it apart. But there's something she says in there, and I always believe, I'm trying to find out who wrote this song, because I got a funny feeling it's a guy, of course, but she's delivering it. But there's a line in there that says, I could tell you where my demons play. And that's the word we don't hear anymore, for the most part, demons. But we all have them. And men, sometimes, we have a bunch of them that we always kind of keep close to the vest, and we don't want to kind of share or say too much about it. And partly because we have to feel we trust you enough to open up, and you're going to receive it well, and not basically look and start to judge, criticize, which is, you know, kind of common. So men sometimes hold back to make sure that they can release and open up and share. It doesn't have to be demons, but open up and share and really understand, like Mr. Charles said, that, you know, this is not going to go everywhere. It's not going to be put out for opinion, for fact-finding, and for people to basically sit back outside of you two and analyze and come back and give you a data sheet on what you should do and how you should handle it for the most part. And that happens a lot. I mean, a lot of times you say something to someone, and before you can really kind of finish the conversation, they're waiting to kind of tell someone else. And there is no trust there. A thing that you touched on, Mr. DeMaurice, that I liked, and you touched on a lot of things, one thing you said about the well-being, and that's something that has to be there, knowing that the person really cares about your well-being. And I say well-being, I mean totally, not in the sense of eating or just basically, you know, if you're sick, but well-being enough to know that for the most part, this person really cares that you're always going to be good. There's something inside them that links to you that they understand and they feel and they want to know that all times you're good. And if you're not, they're sincere about, okay, if you're not, they want to help you to be good. And you can kind of sense and feel that. Because that's what I believe a man and a woman should share from both sides of the fence. That well-being, caring about somebody's well-being, that they're good. If they're not, help them to be good, in a sense, help them to get where they need to be in a constructive manner. No, trust is a lot deeper than infidelity. It really is. And the most part, when we think of trust, that's the first thing we think of. He cheated on her, she cheated on her. But it goes a lot deeper than that. I'm not going to say that I can't love you until I fully trust you, because my heart doesn't allow me to basically pick or choose in that situation. It goes out if it's necessary and if it connects. My heart don't think about trust. My mind does. And my mind does because you want to protect yourself. You want to basically shield yourself from injury, hurt, stuff of that nature. So, in that sense, you want to make sure trust is there. But the heart itself, they ain't thinking about that. It's not thinking about it. The heart doesn't have really a cover around it to block it from being hurt. So I believe in that sense, Mr. DeMaurice, I think sometimes our trusting kind of comes back to our past experience, our level of past experience, where we may have seen some folks that were untrusting, that were let inside of our camp, and we kind of seen that. So it kind of makes us, in a sense, a little less likely to trust again. Is that possible?
I think it's possible. You know, it depends on the person that, you know, the experiences they had and what those experiences kind of dictate who they are going to be going forward. I think that's very possible, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come to you in a second, Mr. Charles. That's what I think is interesting, man, because I think we, you know, for me, from one experience to the next, I try to always start with a clean slate. I'm not saying it's always easy. For some folks, it may not be possible. But I always try to kind of wipe the slate clean and basically give someone a chance to draw what they're going to draw. And based on what they draw and how they come across, that's how my reaction is going to be, not based on what happened maybe a little while ago. But same question for you, Mr. Charles. Sometimes our level of trusting is based on past experiences.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with that. Because if somebody really hurt you and you gave your all and you put everything out there, then sometimes you might say to yourself, well, next time I'm going to be very careful with who I trust. They're going to have to show me something a lot more. And I think, too, that's where, for myself anyway, I think about this even more. While we said love was, we said love was most important first, is because trust takes time, man. Trust is not something you just give over, you get overnight. And you can love somebody, but how long does it take you to trust them? That's what I'm interested in. My point is, if you're in a relationship with somebody, there are different levels of how people go about trusting people, and when do they reach that mark? And I think when you talk about that trust, you have to really evaluate that, because I can love you a lot, love a person a lot, and care for them, but that trust might take a long time, and it might take a while even to that point where I may not be able to totally commit because I can't trust you, but I can love you. I can love you, but I think love is part of the equation to getting to trust, in my opinion. That's part of part of that, because trust goes a long way. And I guess my question I'd like to throw back out at DeMaurice, how long it take you to trust, bruh? Is that a 1 month thing, 2 month thing? Is it 2 years, 5 years? Hell, speak to me. I'm trying to understand it.
It varies, man. It varies on the person that you're with. And I don't think I don't think you just fall.
You trust me now?
I think we're confusing maybe love with infatuation, where you meet somebody and you feel a thunderbolt. You don't even know that person yet, but you know that you feel something strong for this person. Maybe it's infatuation or it's passion, or, you know, you just really, you know, you really crave this person, and it's that animalistic kind of magnetism that you got to be with this person. But I think love takes time, too. I mean, to truly love and care, it takes time because you have to get to know that person, and you got to get to know all the, you know, we talked about earlier, the demons and all the bad stuff as well as the good stuff, because there is a chemical that goes off, a pheromone that goes off when you first meet a person where you can't eat, you can't sleep, you think about them all the time, you're just floating on a cloud. That wears off at a certain amount of time. And then you start meeting a real person, and you start that chemical kind of wears off. Then you start seeing the person really who they really are. So maybe that chemical is there for us to kind of build those emotions and build those feelings up to when we start hearing about the not too good things or the weaknesses of the person, that we kind of weigh it and go, okay, I'm going to stay, even though that, you know, this isn't everything that it was cracked up to be. So I think it takes time to get that love and trust where you decide, you know what, maybe I want to spend the rest of my life with this particular person. I'm always leery and scared when people meet people for like a week or two or a month, and then, oh, I'm going to be with this person for the rest of their life. You don't even know that person. You ain't live with them. You ain't spent a weekend doing a road trip. That's when you really learn about somebody. So it's just you and
that road trip again.
You and that person. And you, I remember one buddy of mine said, you know, he was all in love with this girl, and they went, and she lived out west, and he wanted to see the Grand Canyon and all this other stuff. And he said it was the worst time. I think he spent a week together. The worst time. And so they went to the Grand Canyon to, like, the edge in one part. And she said, you want to see the Grand Canyon? There it is. I mean, from lovey-dovey, I can't bear to live without you, and I got to be on the phone with you, to I can't wait till you go back home because I'm so sick and tired of you. So it can't wear off, and it takes time. I think it takes time, and it varies on the person. How much do they show you? How much are they willing to commit? How many skeletons they got in their closet? What are they willing to reveal that may be a deal breaker for you? So, I mean, it all takes time. I tend not to rush into anything anymore because, you know, I rushed in and got hit with a bat upside the head a few times, and I'm like, okay, I get it now. I really get it.
I'm with Mr. Charles here on this one, man, because I know you can't probably give a time, but I would like for you to do a little better. And I tell you, and you said something at the end, which is interesting about getting hit in the head. And I think that's the thing. If you got hit in the head, you know, how long was it take before you got hit in the head? Because realistically, you know, I'm not going to say I put a time frame on it. But if you're a good judge of your character, you got to know something early on if you can trust this person or not. And if you just keep waiting for the shoe to fall, for something to drop out, say, aha, I knew I couldn't trust you, you always kind of be in that stage of trying to pay attention. But to me, if I sense early on that you're not trustworthy, then you're not really worth my time. I'm not waiting around to kind of find out, you know, if I was right or wrong. I'm going to go with my first instinct. Now, here again, the slate is clean. I'm giving you a chance to basically prove me wrong or prove me right, but I'm not kind of thinking, okay, it's got to be a period of time. And that's the phrase I hear people say that irks me, getting to know you. It could be 3 years for people to know each other. I'm still getting – what? If you don't know me enough by now, you ain't going to never know me. Ain't that much to me. So realistically, I understand you want to be guarded. At the same time, damn, you got to live a little bit because people are people. People are going to make mistakes and things are going to happen. So in that sense, I think, you know, and everybody, I know you do things different. I know everybody look at things different, but I really believe you know early on if this person is trustworthy. And I'm not saying she ain't going to do something that's going to, you know, could be screwed up. But in a short period of time, you know. And if you don't, something's wrong with you. Your instincts tell you, your gut speaks to and tells you it's a possibility this person is really worth placing your trust with. Now, I'm not saying you place everything immediately. And I'll say this, man. I can't remember the time where love didn't have me eating or doing whatever, bro. I'm going to eat and sleep. What's going on? It is what it is. So I'm one of those, yeah. But I'm gonna come back to you because I'm not sure if you answered Mr. Charles' question. You kind of went around, but if you can give us an example, whatever, but give us something that you feel that maybe 3 months you start to feel that she's worthy of being trustworthy. Because to me, what I'm hearing, I'm not sure if Mr. Charles is hearing this, it's almost like you're waiting for the shoe to drop. It's like you're thinking, waiting.
Not at all. Not waiting for the shoe to drop. But I think people sometimes, and I wrote this in the book you guys read, that people sometimes will have a time period where they're only going to give you things that you want to see until they feel comfortable enough to reveal their true selves to you. So whether it takes 5 months, 6 months, I remember interviewing a woman before I did that book or doing a focus group about the 5 month rule. And I remember her saying, shoot, I could wear a pair of shoes three sizes too tight for more than 5 months and you would never know it. And that told me a lot. That she can fake it till she made it. And I hear a lot of women say that. I fake it till you make it. I heard one of my buddies' wife say that at the wedding reception. One of her best friends who were doing the toast, that she was the queen of fake it till you make it. And one of my buddies who was supposed to give a toast before me put his drink down, say, you do the toast because I can't speak after that, because he was trying to talk him out of it. Out of it before the wedding, because he kind of sensed that. So I do believe people sense that there is, I could trust this person, and they give you signs, things of that sort. But there are certain people who are not going to show you that. They're not going to show you that. And you need to spend a lot of time. You need to talk about a lot of things and get it all out there to where the person feels that, you feel satisfied that, hey, this person is the right person for me. They're the right fit. I need to see you when you're angry. I need to see when you're disappointed and sad. I need to see how you react to things aren't going your way and all that other stuff. I need to see that, because I don't want to be caught blindsided when that stuff does happen and you go, oh snap, I didn't know you were like that, this, that, the other. So I it may be like sounding like I'm trying to avoid the question, but it really depends on the person and how long you spend time with them to kind of figure out whether or not this is a person you want to be with, or that they do some things, or they say some things, or they react in some ways, which are deal breakers for you.
I'll say this, though. I think some cats, man, are really guilty of this, because that's faking and stuff. Let me give you an example. Give what I believe is a good example. It may sound crude to some, but it's what I believe. You can meet a woman and have oral sex with her. She can give you oral sex, bro. You can tell if she's into it or she's not, bro. But if you're paying way too much attention to what she's doing, you believe this is what she's good at. So I say that to say this. A woman that's faking it, you're paying attention to the wrong things, because you're not looking at her character. Because I'm sorry, man, you can't sell character wrong for a long period of time. You can sell a big ass for a long period of time. You know what I mean? You can sell some things. But a woman's character, her heart, you can't misread that, bro. And a lot of cats don't look at that. They look at other things, how she looks, what she makes. She does this, mm-hmm. She does that, how much money she
definitely
makes. And that's what they get caught up in. And then, because you can't, here again, you can't misact your heart. You can't misact if someone's basically have good for you and they really care about your well-being. I read an article a couple of days ago, and this to me was based on trust, but it kind of blew up in this guy's face. Well, he came across this woman. They didn't say how long they were dating, but this woman was married, was engaged with this guy. And the guy died 3 weeks before they got married. So she started dating another gentleman. So she told him about this, but she didn't give him the date when the guy died. So he decides to propose to her. So when he proposes to her, she basically insists on getting married at a certain date within the year. It's like, no, I couldn't get my mother in town and blah, blah, blah. And she wouldn't compromise on no other date. Well, he said, well, we'll just hold off for a little while. In the meantime, she moved on and had invitations printed up with that date and started mailing them out to people. And it wasn't until his brother-in-law said he got an invitation in the mail. He was getting married that day and showed him. He was like, wait a minute. That's not the date, you know, her and I agree upon. You know, we decided to leave it and come back to it. So when he approached her, she acted like, what's the big deal? You know, and then when he found out that her, and his brother-in-law basically told him, now it's her ex-husband or the guy that's supposed to marry, date, get married. And he basically said, well, we're postponing. Bro, what are you postponing? Because she basically showed you who she is in a sense. So what are you postponing? And that's why I say, well, you know what's there. You know what's real. She showed you her character. Forget what she looks like. Forget what type of head she gives you. Forget all that other stuff that at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. She showed you her character. She showed you her heart. She showed you everything she needed you need to know in that act that she did with Center of Limitations. So some of these cats, bro, and, you know, that basically get caught up in that dumbness, they weren't paying attention to the right thing. They was looking elsewhere. But yet they was trying to find a woman of their dreams. They get caught up in that. And speaking of finding a woman of your dreams, man, I want to talk about brothers that are basically going out of this country, finding what they believe is young love and losing their mind. And I know a few. I don't know if you know cats, know if any, but I know a few, man. They're going to Brazil. Don't let them go to the DR, man, the Republic. It's all over. And they come back. And this one cat, I'm going to speak on this one cat that I never went to Brazil. I remember one day him and I was in New York. And, you know, he was dating this woman from Brazil. And he went over there. And he wanted to show me a picture of her.
Yeah.
So anyway, we stand in New York. And he says to me, I said something about a woman that walked by. Man, I don't even take Brazilian woman. I said, Mofa, look around you. You seen a Brazilian woman here? Shut that talk up. What are you talking about? Now, this same cat, further the story, this same cat, you know, was sending her stuff, coach bags, back and forth, on the phone with her all the time, yeah. So anyway, eventually he brings her to this country by marriage. She wasn't with him for a week, before she took off with her family and Philly and started stripping. So there's other stories. I can go on and on. But my point is, why are brothers going to these foreign countries, I call them foreign, finding these young women, falling in love with them and losing their mind, Mr. Jones?
Well, you know.
here it comes.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of men, for some reason or another, they don't know. They don't have a clue about what's real. And they feel like the only way, when you make that move over there, to me, the only way that you can really capture a woman's attention or what have you, you got to spend money. And I think that some men believe when you spend money and you marry them and you go over and put them these women in positions that they never perhaps would have had unless you brought them over to the States. It's almost as if, to me, that they feel like they have control, right? Because without me, what are you? Look where I found you. Look what you had. You had nothing. Now I'm in control. And it might be an ego trip. It might be a power trip. But I think that's what it is. And some men, I think, feel like the way that they can capture women, and particularly happens with men that are real wealthy, they feel like the way they control women is by the use of their wealth, their dominance. But we all know, though, that anything else, if some women know that they can run game and still get your money without doing a lot, they're going to do it. And imagine somebody coming over here, like the young lady, you marry her, you already buying her all this stuff, she can get away from you and still stay in the States because now she's a citizen or about to be one. How's she going to love you? She don't know you. She know you're a fool. I'm just being real. She know you're a fool because you don't even know her. You start giving her money. You might have a few encounters with her. But again, I just remember, come back to, and I'm going to bring it back to the original point. But my dad was like, she paying for? For what? Why is it about the money? Why can't, if you are a real gentleman, you are a man that's smooth, you are a man that has character, you are a real man, you can entice a woman to talk to a woman and even connect with a woman just by talking to her. Now, my father's one of the best at that, baby. I said, Daddy, I had a situation where my father was doing something. He was dating or seeing a younger woman, and she was gorgeous. And I asked my father, are you paying her? My father said, are you kidding? The hell's wrong with you? She paying me. Anyway, and to the point where I literally saw a transaction where something was going on, and the lady went into her purse. And it wasn't so much about paying for acts, but it was more or less she was willing to give money. Where she was, say, to a point, something happened, and she wasn't a person, gave my father like $200-$300, like, was no big deal. And I'm like, I guess he not. But that's what I'm saying. So if you had to pay to go get a wife, and no disrespect to those that do, that's what you do, that's what you want to do, that's how you think you found love, who am I to judge? But I don't come from that. I wouldn't come from that cloth, baby. I got $2 in my pocket, and you put me in this position, I'd be like, let's roll, man. We got, look, we set up for tonight. Anyway, that's another story. That's in book two. Anyway.
I've always believed this, man. For women, good conversation is foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of men don't have good conversation. So they rely merely on their wallets to try to do or try to get where they need to be. Because they're not self-confident, they don't have it within them. And I've heard many women say this to me over the years. Sex starts in my head first before it starts in my legs. So if you can get me in my head, my legs are going to open. It's just that simple. And men tend not to understand that because they focus so much, a lot of men, I'm not going to say men in general, but they focus so much on basically trying to wow, trying to show I'm this, I'm that, I'm better than the average guy that's walking around here. And as you said, Mr. John, they go over there, they can come across that way. They don't realize they'd be playing it for a fool. And they don't realize that she does everything for you when you're there because she has an angle, bro. She's been taught and trained to do this. And what I never understand is what they don't think about is when your plane is taking off leaving, another plane is landing ready to come in for her. And they just, I'm amazed that they don't understand that theory. So we're coming to you, Mr. DeMaurice. What's going on with these? And it's been going on for a while. It's nothing new. Well, black men going out of the country to find younger women to marry. What's going on, bro?
Man, I know a couple of brothers that, one didn't even come back. He went to Brazil for a vacation, and ain't nobody seen him since. Get postcards every now and then. Keep my job, my apartment, all that stuff. Y'all give away, sell, whatever. I'm good here. I'm good. And one brother who did decide he was going to move back, go back there, and just make a go of it. I think they give you an experience and a way of seducing men that we don't get here. We've got a lot of independent women here. That, you know, you want me to do what? Nah, I'm independent. I don't need you and all this other stuff. And I think they know the art of seduction. They know how to make a man feel like a king. And the things and to say and to do that. And I think they, in some ways, they use that to get what they want and get the man they want and to be more secure in situations where, women are probably in poverty or they probably not living in like the middle class or upper class, things of that sort. And they use it as a way to kind of come up in some kind of way. Not all women are in that position, but I think some of them do. And so they use what they got to get what they want, as James Brown would say. And so I think that there's an allure for the erotic. Nature of some of the women that are in different countries, maybe the customs, the culture is more so that they put men first and that the men are the leader and that probably brings out the nature of the man. And so it's probably giving them an experience that they're not getting in this country, because not too many women will do that for men here. And so once you kind of get, I remember going over to Europe, and the way I was treated in Europe was like, I went over to Germany, and my father was sitting there looking at me and like, all these women looking at you and coming up to you and all this other stuff. I wasn't experiencing that in the United States. And they were doing it because I was a darker skin. They loved the dark-skinned black man. And I had never been I had never really experienced that in my entire life here in the United States, where I was preferred over fair-skinned men. And so, yeah, that kind of gets your attention and say, you know what? What am I doing over here in the United States, busting my head trying to do all this stuff? And it's easy here. I'm preferred here. So it makes you feel good about yourself. So I've heard a few of my friends who said that, who had that experience, have those experiences there. I have a brother over here that I train with who, you know, has been to Brazil and all those places, and he dates women from different parts of the world, and so do I. And I remember dating this woman from a Latin American country, and she even said to me that, you know, I treat you much better in a relationship than I would treat somebody in my own race, in my own culture. And I said, why? And she said, because it's brand new. I'm learning things. You treat me different than they do. So it just seems like this is the way I want to be treated. And so it just brings out like the very best in me to want to treat you better and cater to you, because in my country, the men don't treat us this way. And so it's probably twofold, man. It's probably, you know, I'm pretty sure that there's some women who like the way they be treated and catered to and given things to. But I think it's sometimes the intrigue kind of makes both parties kind of connect, and they get caught in that intrigue and that newness of a different culture and how women are treated or how this particular man treats this particular woman, and the lure kind of just keeps them there.
I mean, I'm getting with some of the stuff that you said, bro, because it's a different feeling, and I get that, and you're right. They're going to offer you something, or they offer you something that you don't get on a daily basis or you're not used to here, but to fall deeply in love and to get married, I can't connect with that, bro. That I just can't connect with because of the distance, because what they really are basically, most of their angles are trying to be, that I just can't connect with. And you see, I see a lot of different scenarios where they really believe they're in love. I'm speaking of the men. They believe that they're in love, and for the most part, they're doing everything to try to maintain her from a distance. And if she does come to the country, most of the time it doesn't work out. There was a cat that I knew that was having parties. And he basically was bringing women over. They were all pairs, if I'm not mistaken. He would have parties with all pairs, and guys would go to the parties. And a lot of these guys went to the parties when the all pairs found their wives. And one of the cats that I knew that found his wife one day, and when I was standing somewhere, we're talking. And I'm not saying this couldn't have happened if he didn't find his wife there. But she was from Brazil. He's a white cat. So we're talking, and he just going on about it, what he don't like, and blah, 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 and he's running down. And I'm saying to myself, yeah, but she's in this country, bro. She's in this country. You know, I'm just thinking, she's in the country. And realistically, it's just maybe I'm old-fashioned, maybe I'm thinking, I'm not going to a house party and find a wife, bro. I'm just not doing it. That's not my MO. So, you know, there it is. Now, with that being said, I'm going to flip it up. You know, we talked about this a little bit on, you know, on the sports show, and I said we're going to talk about it tonight, because even from that, man, we've been, you know, most men have been losing their minds. They're cotton-picking minds when it comes to strippers, Mr. DeMaurice. And they don't know, what is that about? Because some of it, you know, to me, strippers, I remember going back when I was younger, for the most part, back then, strippers were younger women that maybe was trying to pay their way through college, and they were trying to get the hustle and trying to do something, and they were kind of doing that. And that was kind of like a thing, but it's kind of, you know, if you was going to a strip club back in the day, you didn't want nobody to know. You almost like sneak on the zone. You come out, you kind of make sure nobody was looking, you sneak out. That's all it was, bro. Now, oh, man, it's glorified. And partly because, you know, I think hip-hop has taken it to a new level with the making it rain and all that other stuff. But even that being said, I mean, men lose their minds at strip clubs. How does that happen?
Man, men been losing their minds over women way before strip clubs, man. But think about it, man, when we went up to the strip club, women don't move like that where we are. They don't look like that. They making it clap like that. They doing a whole lot of stuff like that. And it's part of the male fantasy, man. If you look at hip-hop is a male fantasy. That's why they get on the female rappers so hard, and it's so hard for them to succeed. So Cardi B flipped it and made it the woman's fantasy, and now that's why all these women are running after Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion and all that stuff, because they flipped it. They flipped the scenario. But it's basically catering to our fantasy, man. This woman will sit there and talk to you and listen to you and understand you, and, you know, you give her some money, and she gives you your own private dance, and she's just focusing on you, and all your cares just go away. I said this a long time ago, and folks thought I was crazy until they really actually think about it. If you want to get men counseling, start training the strippers to do counseling for men, because that's where men are going to go, give money, and sit there for an hour and talk about their problems and listen to a stripper kind of help them through their particular issues. I truly believe it will make a mint of money. But, you know, they're doing things that, you know, we don't actually see. Our women ain't doing, they ain't dancing like that. They ain't doing, like, you know, shaking it like that and look dressing like that and all that other stuff. So it caters to our fantasy. It's somewhere to make us feel good. And some guys, what they're doing is creating a fantasy, but what some guys do, and you all seen this, we talked about on the show, Go Get Your Boy, they think the stripper is falling in love with them, and they fall in love with the stripper. Like, no, bro, this is her job. This is what she's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. She's giving you a little fantasy. She don't love you like that. She's just going to do that to get more money. You're going to come back next week. You're going to be a regular customer. She does. So you got to talk him out of it. You know, go to McDonald's or go somewhere after. Like, no, bro, that's not what was going on. I was dancing with her an hour before. So, no, that's not what that was happening. So sometimes if you're feeling really bad and you feel like nobody loves you, that's probably not the best place to go to, because they're going to put the fantasy on you where you think you're loved and they care about you and they're listening to you and they're going to make everything better with that slow dance and grinding on you, and you're going to come out with more money because you want that feeling. So that's why a lot of folks are losing their mind, and now it's fair game to put it on Instagram, all this stuff to kind of front, as you were saying on Thursday's show, to front the other guys, like, look how I'm living. And it's just getting out of control.
Yeah, it's been out of control for a while, bro. It's kind been out of control. Yeah. Way out of control. Mr. Charles, what is going on with the craziness with brothers and strippers?
I think Dee Marie hit it on point with the factor that it's fantasy, man. People live through vicariously through these fantasies, and it's things you can't get at home. And now it's to the point, well, as you said before, that now women are going to the strip clubs and they're making it rain too. So it's not just men. Used to be a time where men just went. You're like, oh man, I don't want my wife to find out. But now women, sometimes there's more women in there making it rain more than the men. So yep. It's changed that way. So those that were trying to be secret, as far as those men, they probably don't go to strip club no more, like me. Anyway, but I'm just playing. But it comes down to that, where it's a fantasy, and some men, they don't know how to break away. That's the crazy thing. When you walk in the strip club, some men don't know how to remove that fantasy from reality. They fall into it, and Rachel spent an hour and a half with me tonight, okay? And she spent an hour and a half with you every time you come in here, pairing the money. If you were not pairing it with Rachel, be talking to you. The answer is no. So that stuff we got to put in perspective. But some men just, I don't know what it is. I don't know. There might be women like this too. But don't, some men just are, just, they lose their mind. Some men, I don't care what it is. There's some men, here's the thing. There's really no, I wouldn't call it any coos. I wouldn't say that. But some men, if a woman has a bra on and T-shirt, panties, whatever she is, it doesn't matter what she look like. If she's almost naked, some men just lose their mind because of that whole sexual thing that's going on. The woman could have two bullet holes in her leg, and they just go off because they stuck like that. But when you walk in the strip club, you have to remind yourself from the beginning, this is pure fantasy. And two, how does it work? That's the other thing, too. Most of the women in there are wearing wigs. They made up. You don't even know who the hell they are. It's a show. And they damn sure ain't going to tell you their real name. Sparkle. Come on, man.
the same smell of stripping perfume.
Yeah.
Glitter.
Man. You know, it's interesting because for men that are not well catered to at home, strip clubs are a good place, bro. That's, you know, it's just a good place because I know you spoke of women on doing, and some of that stuff I don't think wives should try to do. I'm not advocating they should, but if a man is basically not really being nurtured and tended to at home, and you walk into a place and she's half dressed, you see basically everything but her nipples, and she walks up to you and she caresses your back, you're like, whoa, you know, that's the way you're doing that at home. Talking to me like this at all, and then you, before you know it, you know you're her drinking, and you know she's like you said, Ms. Vichy, she's making you feel she's listening, and you start to say yourself, you know, everybody listening to me at home. And I remember years ago it was a show called Moral Court. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You start checking, like, you know, I ain't going home after the night till later. But there was a show. There was a show, Moral Court years ago. And I remember this guy was a lawyer, right in Atlanta. And you know, Atlanta is like one of the meccas of strip joints. Anyway, he was married with two kids, and he started going to the strip club. And he met this stripper. This cat divorced his wife, left his two kids. And I think he was about 10 or 12 years older than her. And she told him that, you know, she didn't want to strip anymore in the old 9 yards. Well, anyway, after he got married about 6 months, he found out she's back stripping again. So he said to the judge in the moral judge show that, you know, she promised me. And the guy said to him, did you really think she was going to be able to stop stripping? He said, she's been stripping since she was 16, bro. He said, you were just not smart enough to move everything out of your life and make room for her, for the fantasy. And he said, that's, you know, she doesn't want to sit on all day while you're at work. Her life is stripping. And that's what I go back to say earlier about they pay attention to everything else without really kind of looking at the character and seeing what's going on. And he's still in that show looking like an idiot. This is a brother, too, by the way. A pure idiot. And I'm sorry. I mean, I've known cats, man. They've been married. You know, you go in the club with them, they lose it. They can't wait.
Can I jump in and say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I had a buddy, and his wife knew he was going to strip clubs. And this was her rationale. She didn't care how many times he went to a strip club. She was like, as long as he's just getting his appetite up, as long as he come back home and eat, I don't care what stripper he paying, all this other stuff. She was like, she loved his appetite when he came back from the strip club. She knew when he was going to the strip club what it was going to be that night when he got back home. So she's like, go and get your appetite up. Go sniff some food. As long as you're coming back and eating here, I ain't got no problem with it. So I was like, wow.
Only question is, man, she should be getting his appetite up. There might be a problem there, bro. Hey, Mr. Difference, your first question. Your first question for us, bro.
I sent you a videotape of, and I know you probably haven't seen it yet, DMX, he passed away, hip-hop artist. And one of the things that struck me about him, and I wanted your two feedback about it, is how spiritual he was. Even though he's from the hood and he rhymed grimy and all that other stuff, the thing I always remember from him is how spiritual connected to the to his higher power he was, and how he was fighting. It seemed like he was just fighting so many demons. And the tape that I saw of him was almost like he was preaching his own eulogy. Like he had to get this out before, he was gone. And he was basically saying what you said, Mark, about, you know, this whole pandemic, that it is God's way of sitting us down and making us think and review things and getting things in order. This was our time to kind of sit down and do that. And so, I didn't listen to some of his records. I listened to a lot of them. And it seemed like this guy was tormented a lot by a lot of demons in his life. And one of the things I read is that Beyonce and Jay-Z bought back his masters for $10 million to help support his kids. Brother had like almost like 15 to 17 kids. So hopefully that will help the family. And a lot of these artists make a lot of records but don't have their masters. But I thought that was a gracious move by them to buy the masters, give it to the family for free, not to let the family pay for it, but give it free. And I've heard a lot of artists like Dolly Parton did that for one of her mentors when they got on rough times. So your thoughts about DMX?
Your mind will be kind of quick. I'm really not that familiar with the brother and sorry to pass. I mean, I knew he was out there. I didn't really kind of pay attention to his artistry. I will say this, though. I'm happy to hear what you say about the spiritual side of him, because I've been saying this for a while with a lot of rappers. I'm not saying all of them, man. And we talked about the strip club fantasy to a lot of people. And you said this earlier, if I'm not mistaken. Rap tends to be somewhat of a fantasy. And what really happens is it's sold so well and so harshly that people that listen to it don't understand that. And they're trying to buy in and trying to live the fantasy, and that's partly why some of the craziness we see goes on. Your response to the question, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I think it's so many oftentimes people confuse things. It's like when you see somebody like that might have might be considered more rugged or kind of even gangster type of individual, some people think that there's no way that they can have a spiritual connection. And I think that's just quite false, because of the fact that the higher power or whatever you believe in, one would think that higher power does not judge you like that. I mean, it's to that point of you're accepted for who you are, and you have to do what you got to do to kind of work through it. But that does not mean that you still can't have strong faith, even though you're involved in maybe some crazy stuff or some crazy things. And I think that's where people get messed up, because it's clear DMX was, from what he told us or what he kind of showed us, his life was kind of rough. It was kind of rugged. He did a lot of different things. You mentioned about the 15 kids. I mean, but if you got 15 kids, you can take care of them, then you do what you do. I'm not sure if that was always the case, but just the point of who he was, and he had those demons, or he struggled with, they say, alcohol and then also drugs. But maybe deep down inside, and he was with the Rough Riders as well, maybe deep down inside, he still had a spiritual connection. And that's the way he was able to get right sometimes, and then when he fell off, he could get right. I still believe that, man, that even in the worst-case scenarios, you can still have a spiritual connection. But then the holier-than-thou people would probably contest that. And I think that's the problem, because so many of those holier-than-thou people swear that they have the ability to judge people, but nobody says you all have an automatic a golden pass or a golden ticket to where you want to go. So you have to be very careful because all of us have done wrong. All of us are imperfect. And I think that's key. So when you start looking at other people differently, I think that's when you fall short. Rest in peace.
Yes, sir. Mr. DeMaurice, good question, man. And, yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch your video that you sent, but I will look at it soon. But I did hear that he did some prayers, too, which is interesting. But your response to your question, sir?
Yeah, man. I mean, you can't judge a book by its cover. And one of the things that I've always kind of said to myself, and I have a buddy who says this, too, a lot, is that, you know, I may not be a perfect person and I do wrong things, but the Creator knows my heart. And so nobody else will know, but the Creator knows that, you know, the intentions and what's on a person's heart. And you know your children. You know your children. You know your children. So I believe the Creator knows this child. And, yeah, rest in peace, dude. Rest in peace. Like, he wasn't one of my favorite, but this guy was very talented, very well-read. A lot of people didn't know that. Well-read, was homeless, would give money away. There's some stories about him and how he got his affection for dogs and some funny stories of him battle rapping. And when you see him kind of greet other rappers and things of that sort, it was all out of love. And I remember he was saying in an interview I saw about a couple months ago, you know, you give me love, I give you love. I give you the same amount of love you give me. And I'm like, that's great. And he said something also when we talked about trust, which made me think about him. He said, it's easy for him to trust people because he trusts who they are. So if it's a snake, he trusts them to be a snake. If it's a dog, he trusts them to be a dog. So, you know, that's the easy part. Loving is the hard part, but trusting is the easy part for him. And some really great quotes that I'm going to pull up later to send that. I thought that was very profound for a guy you think is a street dude who didn't know anything but grit and gutter.
Yes, sir. Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your feeling about this. I'm not sure if you guys how strong you feel about it, but I found it interesting. I don't know if you heard about the story about Sean Puffy Combs or Diddy came off where he quoted, made an open letter to corporate America telling businesses to spend more money on black spend more money in black-owned companies as far as advertising. But then somebody's bringing out some questions like, you're calling for these companies to so-called treat you right and these media people right, but he has a history allegedly of underpaying his artists, and they threw that back in his face. Like, is it how can you say one thing when you're definitely guilty of another? Are you talking about one person's sin when you're guilty of another sin yourself?
He reminds me. I mean, I'm not gonna say they're the same, but there's certain people. LeBron is like this to me, and Puffy is this way. If they allow the ground to swell, and then what happens, they don't do none of the work. But once the ground is there and everybody has an idea what's going on, they come in and act like they're doing something. And I'm not saying Puffy hasn't done good things. I know LeBron has done a bunch of good things. But to me, when LeBron speaks politically, it's not from his heart. So when Puffy says this, Puffy's an ass kisser to white America, in my opinion. He's always been that to me. It's just me. I remember he had a show on television where he was trying to do something like American Idol. And he had these kids walking across bridges and everything else. He ain't never, from what I understood, allowed these kids to record or do anything. It was just so he can be on MTV and look like he was important. So Puffy serves himself and only himself, in my opinion. When he opened his mouth, that's all I ever get from him. And they're right. How are you going to basically go to them and tell them to do something that you ain't even doing to your own people? He's an idiot. An idiot, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that he did that and got the backlash, but people are quick to kind of, if you kind of come out with different statements and things of that sort about what we should be doing and things of that sort, because I know he was doing that with the voter, get out the vote and all that stuff. And trying to pull some power moves and it kind of backfired in his face. I don't know. I tend not to listen to kind of celebrities about this. I listen to the experts and the people who really know and try to get my information from that.
But people are quick, especially in this age of social media. If you come out trying to go in one direction, saying we should do this, that, the other, people will go, well, what are you doing? I mean, they're quick to pull that card on you. So I would think that celebrities would know better not to come out and do things like that, especially black folks, because we are harder on our own than anybody else. And so I'm not surprised that you got that pushback from folks saying, well, you're not doing it, so well, what you saying?
Mr. Charles, your reaction.
Yeah, when I look at stuff like this, it just kind of blows me away, particularly having been in the media, right? And now he talks about how his cable TV network, Revolt, has a fight for crumbs like everybody else, other black businesses, to get the advertising revenue from the big business who make billions of dollars off the black community. But there have been a lot of black businesses or African-American businesses that have struggled. I don't know about his struggling, though. I mean, I ain't mad at him because he still wants to make money, but there's a report that in 2020 he made $55 million.
Hmm.
This is another venture that he's jumping into, but he has a number of things he makes a lot of money off of. So, and then, too, if you're not paying, you're taking care of your people, that's another thing. But when you say that, it's almost as if he's trying to speak for the other black media. There are black newspapers around here that every week have struggled for years just to see if they can come up with enough funds to pay their damn staff. And he in no way, to my understanding, even connects with that at all. He made $55 million, and they said before that he was known to was supposed to be worth, in 2017, his worth was supposed to be $820 million. So how you hurting, bro? I ain't mad at you, but really? How you hurting?
Yeah, I think that I think the pushback there was legitimate because, like I said, I don't see where some folks, you know, they wait for the table is set, then they want to come and act like, you know, they prepared it. And he's one of those. He really is. And I spoke of another person, and I won't start throwing names out, but I think we have to pay attention because that's what a lot of people do. Because, to me, if you're not in the front, then don't come in the behind. And they wait for things to kind of set themselves up. And, yeah, do newspapers need advertising from corporate companies? Yes. But you really think, realistically, he knows this, Puffy writing a letter is going to make it happen? I mean, realistically, that's going to make it happen. So he wants to make it seem like he's out there doing something to have his bread buttered. But at the end of the day, he's not doing much of anything other than for himself. Yeah, I mean, you spoke of the money that he's making. I used to hate to drive to the neighborhood and see him promoting that his that Ciroc. I used to hate to see that. Because to me, you could have done something different, bro. But, you know, it made him money. He didn't care. You know, and I think sometimes he even said something to that extent. He didn't care. Because he would talk about why aren't those billboards in white neighborhoods? You know, not that he controls where they place them, but they were damn sure in our neighborhoods all the time. Like he's having the best time of his life. Gentlemen, you know, we got about 90 minutes left to go, so I'm coming back to you real quick for 30 seconds. Something you want to just say within 30 seconds if we get out of here. Mr. Charles, you go first, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations to my good friend who's going to make that jump. Hopefully things work out well for him. We just heard that Eddie George is going to be the new head football coach at Tennessee State University.
Wow.
That's my guy. 2-7 in the building, baby.
There it is. Mr. Reese, 30 seconds is yours, sir.
Yeah, man. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I know I talked about him on the show many times, my Uncle Kurt, our Uncle Kurt passed away tragically I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday, but I got the news Saturday morning. Many stories about him, and all I could do is think about, when I think about him, I feel sad that I won't be able to talk to him again, but I'll always leave a smile on my face because he always left you with a smile on your face when you met him and saw him.
Yes, sir, the great philosopher, man. Yeah, I think it was two nights ago.
Yeah,
okay. The great philosopher. He'll definitely be missed. Gentlemen, we'll get together soon. Enjoy your night always if you can. Stay black, which I know you can do. Stay black and stay strong. It's One Black Man Talk, Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott.